Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm convening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, May 3rd. We have public hearings on three bills this afternoon. Before we start those, could we please have a roll call?
Representative Levy.
Excused, but she will be joining us soon.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith is present by video.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you for that. The last time we checked, just a few minutes before the published start time of this meeting, we didn't have anyone signed up to testify for the first two bills that are on the printed agenda. Manny, is that still correct? Is there no one signed up for 2440 and 2721?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'm going to start in a different order then. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2441. Legislative Revenue Office.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And House Bill 2441 is a tax credit sunset extension bill. So again, this is one of the 11 tax credits that are up for their annual sunset review, or not their annual, but the annual sunset review process for the tax credits. And this one in particular would extend the sunset related to the Public University Venture Development Fund tax credit. So just as a quick refresher, the credit itself is a credit that's basically designed, or its policy purpose is to incentivize donations to university venture development funds. And it does that by offering a credit equal to 60% of the amount donated to the university venture development fund. And then the university used those funds to support the commercialization of university research and development. And I believe you have a number of individuals signed up from the universities that can give you a little more background on how that works. But again, as this is one of the 11 credits up for sunset review, included in the media materials and OLIS is some background information, the credit report excerpt, the tax credit report that the Legislative Revenue Office puts together. That information related to this credit is up in the media materials with some background material and some policy analysis that goes into more detail of this credit to provide that information to you, as well as some slides that were presented to the policy committee. So there's some material available to you in OLIS that can give you more background if you would like it. But again, this is a standard tax credit credit up for review, and it's receiving the six-year sunset extension. So it'll be extended to January 1st, 2028.
Thank you for that. Committee members, any questions for Mr. Easton or clarifications? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Kyle, do you know how many universities or what universities have these venture funds?
Yes, Representative Marsh, we do have a table in the information that's provided in the meeting materials, but it's available to the, I think it's to all eight of the universities. Predominantly, it's Oregon State, University of Oregon, Portland State, and OHSU that receive the most amount of tax credits to potentially allow. This is also in the slides. It's in the media materials. I'm on slide seven. But the smaller universities, Eastern, Southern, Western, and Oregon Institute of Technology, all receive potentially up to $7,500 in credits that they can issue, where the other universities, Oregon State's at the top of the list there with almost $4 million in credits that they can issue, so soliciting or receiving these donation amounts. So it really is tailored towards the four largest of the universities.
Chair Nathanson, may I ask a follow-up?
Sure, sure.
And I see the chart. Thank you for referring it to me. It was just farther down in the document than I'd made. How are those tax credit limits? It looks like the actual impact is much less than what's allowed. As I read it here, we're talking about for the biennium $0.3 million. and the allowable is, I don't know, that probably adds up to $8 million or so. So how are those credit limits determined, and do we know who is actually benefiting from the small number of tax credits that are being purchased? What universities?
Yeah, Representative Marsh, so the overall cap is kind of an outstanding cap of $8.4 million in credits. And this isn't statute, so it specified which universities receive which amount, although I believe the university presidents can, if they agree, they could exchange some of these amounts. But the design of this credit is, the credit is intended to incentivize these donations to the University Venture Development Funds. So individuals make donations to these funds, and then the University Venture Development Funds can use those as really a seed money for university projects, and the idea with getting these projects to commercialization. And then after, as that happens, the amount of the credit that has been issued, there are repayments made back to the general fund from the universities based upon the royalties received from these projects that, let's say, they assume they do go, they don't have to go public, but they are successful and become, a business operation in some way. So they have funding coming in. That money is then can be sent back to the general fund, which then offsets the credits originally issued, and the university can then begin issuing more credits if they've reached their respective cap. And so what we have right now is we have a number of universities that are at or near their cap. So going forward, until they start repaying the general fund, there's not a whole lot of room under the cap for those particular universities. Whereas University of Oregon is the example of maybe the other side, where they've already repaid more or less their full allotment of credits up until this point. So then they have their full room under the credit amount, credit cap for that university is available to them once again, but they're kind of repaying their credit as they go right now. So in that way, there's almost no cost right now to University of Oregon as they've repaid their credit amount that they've used in the past. But that's where going forward in terms of what is the revenue impact for a number of these universities as they're nearing their particular cap, they'll eventually be capped out of the program until they start repaying the general fund, and then they'll receive kind of their credit amount, that amount under what they've repaid the general fund, they can then reissue again in more credits to solicit more donations.
Got it, thank you very much.
Representative Reschke, did you want to follow up? Okay. If there are no other questions, oh, Rep. Pham, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Kyle, could you please clarify the $8.4 million cap, the time period that that cap can be used? Is that per biennium or?
Yeah, Representative Pham, that's kind of an outstanding amount. So that was set in statute. So it's not each year, it's just more what is the amount of credits that have been issued so far minus any amounts that have been repaid. So it's kind of a running total. And then as if universities repay it, they kind of bring down the amount that they've used and they get that amount back. So that $8.4 million is kind of a hard cap on what could be outstanding in total. But then as the universities repay it, they get room under that cap once again to reissue these credits.
Oh, okay. So it's not a recurring cost in the way that we normally might understand tax credits.
Right. In many ways, in going forward, I guess if it's allowed to sunset, then the change there is you could just be receiving funds back to the general fund without a university being able to reissue the credits for donations received going forward. So yeah, it is a little bit different than your traditional tax credit, I suppose.
I see. But thank you for that clarification.
I think that's all the questions for now. We can take other questions later. I'd like to move to public testimony now. We have four people signed up on the witness registration. I'll tell you the order so that you can start to be ready. And we ask everyone to keep your camera off and mic off until you're called on. And then please do turn on your camera and mic. The order will be Joseph Janda, Juan Barranza, Summer Gibbs, then Bennett Minton. Joseph Janda.
Hi, Hello, I'm figuring out the camera and the mute here. I apologize. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reschke, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Joseph Janda, and I'm Assistant Vice President of Research and Graduate Studies at Portland State University, with responsibility for PSU's research, entrepreneurship, and commercialization efforts. I've been involved in PSU's University Venture Development Fund program since about 2008. I'm here today to ask your support for House Bill 2441, the University Venture Development Fund. So this program is really meant to do one thing in a number of ways, and that one thing is to support innovations and research coming out of Oregon's public universities towards public impact and commercialization. There's three uses in statute for it. The first is to support internal prototyping projects at universities for promising research. The second is to support entrepreneurship programs at universities for students. And the third is to provide direct support for university startup companies coming out of universities. The Legislative Revenue Office has already said a little bit how the tax credit works. It's kind of a revolving door in that universities are allowed to accept donations up to a certain cap. We use the funds to support entrepreneurship programs or startup companies, and then when revenue comes back from those startup companies, we pay back into the general fund a portion of that revenue, which then resets or regenerates the tax credits. That last bit, that repayment, that revolving door, as I understand it, makes this a little bit different than other tax credit programs. And as has been talked about already, isn't a recurring recurring expense for the state, but is regenerated by the companies that repay the universities, which then repay the state for the tax credits. What's also interesting about this tax credit is that it works for the intended purpose, or at least the universities would be very excited to tell you about the successes of this program. In the last 12 years, the University Venture Development Fund has launched 108 startup companies. And I understand the committee has been provided with a list of those and a little bit about what they do, some of them. Over 7,000 students have been involved and received training on real-world case studies with support from the University Venture Development Fund and entrepreneurship training. Nearly a dozen entrepreneurial programs supporting real-world educational experiences for students have been supported or established with this program. 370 university research innovations have been provided proof of concept funds and resulted in 21 new products to the market so far. And in that repayment portion of this program, over $1 million has been paid back to the state, allowing for the reuse of the state tax credits. The last bit that we are pretty pleased about in terms of the the generation of this program, what it has meant to do, of the 8.4 million tax credit, over 400 high-wage jobs have been created in Oregon, estimated to generate 1.85 million in annual tax revenues to the state. And over the past 5 years, the total is estimated at 16.32 million, which is just about twice what the tax credit cap was to begin with 12 years ago. Renewing this credit will allow the return revenue to generate additional credits and allow the cycle to continue for its intended purpose, which again is to take research and innovations out of Oregon's public universities and turn them into commercial enterprises and public impact while educating students with entrepreneurial skills. I understand my colleague Juan Barraza is here and will talk about some of those entrepreneurial programs that we've developed at Portland State. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Marsh? We can't hear you.
I'm sorry, it's just bad hand management. Okay. Not so fast on the mute button either.
Okay. Next, we'll hear from Juan Barranza.
Could you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, and Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. My name is Juan Barraza. I'm the Director of Student Innovation at the Center for Entrepreneurship at Portland State, and I'm here to talk to you to ask for your support for HB 2441, the University Venture Development Fund. At the PSU Clean Tech Challenge was created 9 years ago with the support of the UBDF Fund. The CleanTech Challenge since then has been able to become a sandbox of innovation where university students at Portland State have been able to prototype, create an idea and launch ventures that are solving a big problem in our communities and our environment and bringing high paying jobs. Until today, university-led ventures created from the Clean Tech Challenge have raised over $12 million, bringing high-paying jobs in our community. Some of the concepts that have been developed is new forms of agriculture with vertical farming, like Next Garden in Portland, or liquid wire, a new flexible liquid metal, very conductive, that can be used in wearables, and have raised recently over $10 million. Part of the Clean Tech Challenge and the experience it brings to our students is an opportunity for them to explore what it's like to create an idea, invent a new technology, test the skills they learn at school, and put it to practice. Many of the students that have gone through the program have gone to file for patents or create ventures. As a result of the Clean Tech Challenge and the support that we received earlier, another programs have emerged and been created. One of them is Invent Oregon, that follows the same pattern, where university students across Oregon are able to prototype an idea at their school, in their communities, and being able to create those ventures that will bring high-paying jobs in our communities. A representative in Marsh County, in Jackson County, from Rock Community College, we have students that have prototype an idea, just retrofitting a gas-powered engine and convert that into hydrogen-driven engine. Representative Reschke District in Klamath Falls, we have students from Oregon Tech that have developed a way to take plastic and convert that into crude oil, among other things. So the UBDF Fund has seeded the next generation inventors, entrepreneurs in our region. Having the program extended would allow us to continue to do that, especially now that's needed in our economy and in the state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Summer Gibbs. Is Summer Gibbs with us? If not, we will move to Bennett Minton. Mr. Minton.
Have I appeared? Yes. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Bennett Minton on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon, a network of volunteers who advocate for a rational and equitable tax code. We oppose this means of funding university research. The right way is through the regular budget process, in which legislative priorities compete for funding each biennium. If the program is as valuable as proponents suggest, it may enjoy the legislature's confidence after appropriate review. The wrong way is through a tax credit available to individuals and businesses. This is another example of the legislature relinquishing oversight of a public purpose to select taxpayers, those who think either university research is worthy, or perhaps those who want the tax credit, or perhaps those with the link to the purposes of the venture fund. It lacks transparency. We don't know where the money is coming from that supports what is supposed to be a public purpose. But because it's a tax credit, all Oregonians are indirectly supporting the priorities of the credit's recipients. The record of the March 18 hearing in the Education Committee and the two witnesses today indicate that several initiatives have benefited from the tax program. LRO's research report 221 describes how the program works. In my reading, it doesn't analyze whether a tax incentive makes more sense than an appropriation through the budget process. It does advise that Oregon's use of the tax code for this purpose appears to be unique among the states. To be clear, TFO takes no position on whether the legislature should support the commercialization of university research. We object to the method. The Oregon Code is rife with these special privileges employed by relatively few sophisticated taxpayers, in this case, five or seven dozen of them. Several of these provisions are up for renewal this session, as Kyle noted. The legislature could take a stand for accountability and transparency by getting rid of them. The Public University Venture Development Fund would be a good place to start, with the funding mechanism handed over to Ways and Means. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the testimony. I will call on Ms. Summer Gibbs one more time. Is Summer Gibbs with us? I'm going to keep the public hearing open just for another minute or two. Committee members, do you have any questions or comments while we're in the public hearing on this bill? I'm going to make a brief comment. I realize that there are a couple of local businesses that likely benefited from the activities of this, that this would have enabled. And Eugene, there's a company named Defunkify, and I've actually tried the product and then I bought the product, which is commercially available. And I'm also acquainted with the company that was called NEMA Metrics. It has now morphed into something bigger and better. There was a comment a couple of minutes ago about funding university research this way. And from some testimony that I read that's online for the previous hearing, the testimony was written by a Eugene resident. It's on the letterhead in Vivo Biosystems. And in that letter, it mentions, and I am going to have a question for LRO. It says, let's see, the University Venture Development Fund, the UVDF funding to write, file, and protect the original intellectual property of our company was the reason we were able to land our first set of investors. Since then, our strong relationship with the UO and subsequent programs supported by the UVDF has facilitated internships from the business school, funding for us to pursue large grants and contracts, and has driven the hiring of talent from the UO's graduating classes. So my question for LRO is, it seems that this is more about the commercialization of research and not actually funding the research itself. Can you confirm that or help me correct my understanding of this?
Yes, Madam Chair, I think that's absolutely correct. It's the purpose and some of the testimony that our office reviewed in past legislative sessions when this concept was discussed as well. One of the things that came up was the idea of the proof of concept and how helpful these funds can be at that stage, because that would be before perhaps private venture funds could be sought, but it's really that proof of concept for the, I'm trying to think of an example, but for whatever was coming out of the university before it really went into that full commercialization process, it's really in that early stage that this funding can be helpful. But yes, again, this is more of that turning a thought in a lot of cases into that commercial process, but it can also be used to support some of the education specifically around these type of, I guess, programs or courses or something on those lines. But yes, I think it's less broad than just saying it's supporting university research in general. It is a little more specific in what it is focused on, yeah.
Okay, and then a follow-up. If one were to look at the list of all the projects or companies or products, are we talking mostly about the export economy? We're not talking about someone starting up a retail service business, is that correct? This is mostly about products that are become part of the state's export economy?
Madam Chair, I couldn't speak specifically to that one. I didn't do a full review of the individual projects that they supported with the, I guess, the contributions. It is specified in statute, but I don't know if there's anything specific saying that this is focused on like an export trade or anything of that nature. I think it could be a variety of offerings.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I just had a clarifying question about how this tax credit works. I understand that many tax credits go through an auction. So I'm just trying to understand better, what is the university have to do to make sure that those tax credits are purchased? And is there also an auction? I know that some tax credits auction, but I'm still trying to figure out if they all do.
Yeah, Representative Pham, this is not an auction credit. Those are actually somewhat unique. This one would be for, you make the contribution to the University Venture Development Fund itself. So you make the donation to the university, and then you'd get a certification to be able to go ahead and claim that credit when you file your taxes. And then the universities are responsible for kind of tracking their allotment of credits and how they are up against the cap. And there is an annual report they file as well that does just that, that kind of tracks the number of contributions, how much they've paid back, and where they are against their individual university allotment credit amount to make sure that they don't go beyond that. And you can also see how close they are coming to that cap as well.
Thank you.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Easton, I guess my questions are going to be around who takes advantage of this tax credit. Do you have to be a resident of the state, or you just need to owe taxes in the state to take advantage?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, I believe it's available to residents or then part year non-residents. So yeah, you would need tax liability, I suppose, here in the state to benefit from that.
Right, okay. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, we do have some information on the number. It's not a very large number. I think over the past 10 years or so, it's generally averaged around 80 or so, kind of range. That it's not a large number of taxpayers in any given year. It's a relatively small number, I suppose.
Right, it says, I think the staff summary report says 70 taxpayers and very few corporations, which leads to my second question, if I may, Madam Chair.
Sure.
And that is, thank you. Why don't more businesses take advantage of this? I would think if I was a business that I needed product development, that it would be in my benefit to donate to one of these funds to get some research done so that I can develop my product faster and more efficiently. I'm just curious if there's any barriers for corporations or businesses that take advantage of this, or is it just unknown?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, I could be wrong in this, but I don't believe a business could specifically invest in, say, a project that they know a student is working on or something of that nature. I mean, I suppose they could in terms of a private sense, but working through the university, the funding goes to the university, and then they use that to kind of support that, so there'd be less direct control, I suppose.
Very good. Thank you very much.
I don't see any other hands up. I will call on the last witness now, Summer Gibbs.
Great. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Please go ahead.
Perfect. Thank you. So, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee, I'm Summer Gibbs. I'm an associate professor in the Biomedical Engineering Department at Oregon Health and Science University. Thanks for the opportunity to share my story with you today. So support through UVDF has really been instrumental in helping me to take a promising early stage research concept that was developed in my laboratory and move it into commercialization, and even recently into a startup company out of my lab. For a little bit of background, my lab is focused on development of novel fluorescence imaging. Largely, we're applying our technologies to cancer. We are particularly interested in the idea of fluorescence-guided surgery, which I would describe as sort of cut by color or like paint by number. Fluorescence-guided surgery has really found significant acceptance in the oncologic surgery space, and this is really due to the challenge of disease tissue removal while sparing as much normal tissue for the patient as possible. So my lab has developed nerve-specific probes that can be used with the clinical fluorescence-guided surgery systems. This novel technology is really the only method to directly visualize nerve tissue in the operating room, and I'd say that it's an exciting development because it helps surgeons to avoid damaging nerves during surgery. where actually nerve damage is a really common problem in many surgical situations, and this leaves patients with loss of function, chronic pain, and general disability. So UBDF provided us funding to evaluate the preclinical pharmacology and toxicology profiles of our lead nerve-specific compounds. And while these are necessary steps in the clinical translation pipeline, they're not really traditionally funded by existing grant mechanisms. But due to the commercial potential of our nerve-specific probe technology that was partially realized after evaluating these preclinical profiles, we were able to spin a startup company called Inherent Targeting out of my lab. And actually, one of my former PhD students, Dr. Karnabarth, is the current CEO of our company. So UBDF funding helped us leverage both the technology and the necessary preclinical safety profiles to access additional grant funding. We were lucky enough to get a Murdoch commercialization grant, and that's culminated to date with recent business grant funding from the National Institute of Health or the NIH. We've brought about $2.25 million into our Oregon-based startup. The recent NIH funding to our company, Inherent Targeting, has also allowed Dr. Barth to dedicate his full time and attention to the startup and for us to hire our first employee. So while Inherent Targeting, which is currently located at the startup incubator, Oregon Biosciences Incubator, is still in its infancy, the company really has quite a strong foundation and a great potential to translate contrast agents to the clinic, hopefully improve surgical medicine, and really grow into a thriving Oregon company. And we're really excited about the future of this technology and our ability to translate the nerve-specific probes to the clinic to guide surgery. None of this would have been possible without the critical early-stage funding that UBDF provides promising research ideas like this. So I urge you to support HB2441 and the University Venture Development Fund. I appreciate your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions should there be any.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee members, any remaining questions or items to discuss with any of the witnesses who have joined us or with LRO? Anything else on this bill before I close this public hearing? Okay, to all the witnesses, and I want to check the hands one more time. Okay, I'm closing this public hearing on House Bill 2441. Now I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2440, Legislative Revenue Office.
Okay, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Once again, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 2440 is also another one of the 11 tax credits that are up for their sunset review this legislative session. And in this case, House Bill 2440 is relating to the Working Family Household and Dependent Care Credit. So again, this is an existing credit, and the bill itself would just simply extend the sunset of that existing credit 6 years from January 1st, 2022 to January 1st, 2028. Just to give you a brief background on the credit itself, again, this credit is designed to offset costs for a taxpayer related to the taxpayer who is, if they're working, looking for work, or attending school full or part-time. And these costs would be, they're considered employment-related costs, but they're for, generally, we're going to be for caring of a dependent child who's under the age of 13, or also potentially for a disabled spouse. So if the taxpayer has costs, say child care costs, this credit would help to offset some of those child care costs, depending on the qualification for the taxpayer, which is based upon income of the taxpayer and a number of other qualifying requirements. And again, as this is one of the 11 credits up for sunset review, there is materials that's been uploaded in OLIS under the media materials from LRO's tax credit report, along with some background slides as well for you to peruse at your leisure.
Thank you. Manny, I'm checking. We have no witnesses for this bill and the remaining bill. Is that correct? I feel like I just have to say it publicly to dot the I's and cross the T's.
Yes, that is correct. No one else has signed up.
Okay, we have no witnesses to testify, and it appears that no one testified in support of this bill in the policy committee, where it was heard before it came to revenue, although there is a report that was written by the committee and submitted to us. Committee members, any questions or discussion with LRO before we close this public hearing on 2440? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a thought. It seems odd to me that there was no proponent of this tax credit, either in housing or here in revenue. So I'm just curious if maybe LRO can go back 6 years and see who might have been a proponent of it 6 years ago when it was extended. And or I'm just in my mind, I'm trying to think, is this a function of not knowing that it's up for renewal, not understanding the process of remote testimony, or what may be going on here? Because it's 32 million dollars in this biennium, and then 63 in the out one. So it's a one that seems to be used, but it's really curious that nobody's testifying.
Yeah, Representative Reschke, so this credit was formed actually out of two existing credits 6 years ago in the tax credit review process that was ongoing. So there were two existing credits, and this one was formed out of those two that were allowed to sunset and kind of combined into a single credit as there was much overlap between those two. This is, to your point, yeah, this is the largest of the 11 credits up for sunset review. It is a refundable credit. It's available to many taxpayers. Certainly, and this was came out of, I believe it was Human Services and Housing was the name of it at the time. Former Representative Kenny Geyer's committee, and Chris is nodding because you also worked quite a bit in running the various simulations on how to get these two credits formed into a single credit with the overlap and such. And Chris, it looked like you might have wanted to jump in. I don't want to.
Was just going to add that Representative Kenny Geyer, the chair of that committee, was a big advocate for it. And there was a lot of work during the 2015 session. And we can probably look up people who testified in favor of it. This might be a kind of credit where we have some of these social policy kinds of tax incentives that there isn't a state agency behind it in terms of administration and so forth. And it's not as widely known or used as the earned income tax credit, for example, because of everything around there being a federal credit and the state level credit. So we see this sometimes where you have these of general value tax credits that don't have a proponent per se arguing for it. In 2015, I just remember Rep. Kenny Geyer really pushing this issue.
I'm looking at the letter that was sent, sent to me for the House Committee on Revenue from the chair of the House Committee on Human Services, Representative Williams. And there's a quote in there from Representative Kenny Geyer in 2015. To enable low-income working families to care for young children and disabled dependents by offsetting care costs so that they may be gainfully employed or attending school full-time. The desired effect is to provide additional tools to help these families climb out of poverty. That's a shortened version of the good overview that Mr. Easton provided for us a few minutes ago. Anyway, this is the letter that's an answer to the standard questions that I had asked all committees to look at when they were reviewing these kinds of expenditures. Any other question? Representative Reschke, you probably had some more. I interrupted you.
No, that's fine, Madam Chair. Thank you. Mr. Easton, you said this is a refundable tax credit, or maybe Mr. Alanak said that. And how many refundable tax credits do we have? We have the EITC, which is the big one. This one is a refundable tax credit. Is that pretty much the universe, or is there are a few others? I'm just trying to get my handle on, because it seems like this would be very important, again, for low-income families to be able to get that kind of cash back, especially for childcare.
Yeah, Representative Reschke, those are the first two that come to mind. I'm trying to think through if I can come up with another one that is a refundable credit. Chris Sanders, one more. So now I feel it's a test for me to think of it. But yeah, to your point, the refundability of this credit really can allow it to be more beneficial. One of the things with this credit is the expenses. So if we're using the example of childcare expenses, those expenses have to be incurred by the taxpayer. And so in the report, and this discussion has come up as well, is this credit can be in some ways linked to direct spending programs. The employment-related daycare program is one that Oregon has that I know is receiving a lot of discussion this session. There was a joint task force this past year about childcare. But so in some ways, this can fill in for some of those direct spending programs where, in that case, if a taxpayer receives direct state support and offsetting some of those costs related to their child care, if that covered, say, 50% of their child care costs, this credit could help to offset the other costs that are actually that out-of-pocket costs for that taxpayer. And that can influence who's benefiting from this credit as well, because it's tailored to, it phases out once your income gets to 300% of adjusted gross income. But it kind of goes up like the bell curve and then phases back down, similar in some cases to the structure of the earned income tax credit. But again, it does adjust with income, and with that in mind, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Easton, actually, Chris, you have another refundable tax credit to mention, perhaps?
Perhaps. The only other one I can think of, and it's one that I don't think the committee has heard of, it's called the Claim of Right Income. And it is a technical credit, and it is basically a repayment of tax. It's an alternative way to, if somebody had paid too much tax in the past, and it's a way of truing up tax. It's not considered a tax expenditure because it's balancing tax out. So we rarely, if ever, talk about it. It's not part of the sunset process, and it's an obscure one. Kyle's a better person than me for not mentioning it.
Thank you, Mr. Hallinan. Any other questions or comments on House Bill 2440 before we close this public hearing? And Representative Levy, I welcome to the meeting. I failed to acknowledge you when I first noticed you had joined us, but thanks for being with us. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2440, opening a public hearing on House Bill 2721.
Okay, Madam Chair, House Bill 2721 continuing the discussion on the Working Family Household Dependent Care Credit. This is a measure that would make an expansion to that credit. So the credit you just heard about with the sunset extension in House Bill 2721, the proposal or the contained in the measure is to expand that credit. And the focus, and there is in the media materials, there is a chart that's sort of a side-by-side chart of existing law and then law changes, but the changes proposed in House Bill 2721, for those that want to reference that document in a little more detail. But the general takeaway of what House Bill 2721 is proposing to do is to expand the Working Family Household Dependent Care Credit. And that expansion is really focused on students, whether they're a student that's married filing jointly or a single taxpayer who's a student. The focus of the expansion there is tailored towards provisions in which to allow a taxpayer who is a student to potentially be eligible for this credit in ways that they may not be presently, or not be to as great extent presently, due to the income requirements contained in statute for the credit itself, underlying credit. So again, that's really the focus is those students, whether predominantly even low-income students, are potentially could receive the greatest expansion from House Bill 2721. But again, there's a little more detail in OLS if you do want to see that side-by-side comparison. One note on this was a measure that was introduced a couple years ago as well. But in 2721, right now, the modifications to the credit would be effective for tax years 2020 and 2021. So it would actually be in that way a retroactive, and I think that may just be residual statute language from the previous iteration of this measure, because it is going back 1 year, and then the measure itself, again, is up for that sunset extension. So that may be a couple things you'd want to consider if you did extend the sunset of the underlying credit and wanted to do this expansion for more than just one retroactive year and 1 year going forward. But again, that's just focused right now on tax years 21 and 2020 and 2021 are the 2 years affected right now.
Thank you. I'm acknowledging publicly that we have no one signed up to testify for House Bill 2721. Committee members, questions or comments? Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Kyle, I have a question. Just could you clarify, I think it's getting later in the afternoon, when you said that I thought I heard you say it would go towards, it would be retroactive for 2020 and 2021, but then it would, of course, continue beyond that. Could you clarify what you meant by it would only, I thought I heard you say something like it would only affect 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, Representative Pham, that is correct. With the way it's drafted right now, it is focused on tax year 2020 and 2021. And again, I'm probably speculating here, but this was a previously introduced, I believe in 2019, this measure or the language contained in 2721. So I think it just kept that same applicability for just tax year 2020 and 2021, since that is when the underlying credit is scheduled to sunset right now. And so if the legislature extended that for the 6 year in the previous bill, that's where you may want to consider then, do you want to keep that policy in place going forward? And then also just in general, would you want this to apply retroactively to tax year 2020, which is what people are filing their returns for right now?
I see. So if we do end up extending the sunset and passing both bills, it would renew for another 6 years.
Yes, I mean, that's where if you extend the underlying credit, it was more trying to flag it that you may want to amend this bill to at least line up that the sunset date and when you want the applicability to occur.
Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, I see the revenue impact statement is in the millions, but it doesn't specify. Is that something you'll be working on going forward here for your chart that I like to see based on the biennia?
Yes, Representative Reschke, this is one of the things we did look at a couple of years ago, and with the potential changes and discussions that have been ongoing related to the direct spending programs as well, especially related to daycare, it's been one of these we've been trying to, yes, we will be definitely looking at it as this bill moves forward, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Additional questions or comments on this one? Mr. Easton, if this were retroactive to take care of a period that wasn't covered, because we didn't get the bill done in 2019, we had a hard time getting closure on some things that were in the works in 2019 and 2020. This is just redrafting a bill the way it was drafted from a couple years ago, right? So if we wanted to make this effective for people to use for 2020, it's most likely, since if we passed a bill now, it wouldn't become effective. It's a tax bill. It wouldn't become effective for until the 91st day after sine die. I assume that applies to this bill. People to comply with the law unless they had an extension. If they have filed their tax return by May 17th of this year, they'll be needing to do an amended return. Is that, am I understanding that right?
Yes, Madam Chair, that would be correct. If you wanted to make this to retroactive to tax year 2020, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions or comments on this? Okay, I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 2721. Mr. Alanak, any observations, comments, information on any of these bills or any other business before the committee?
I think the only thing I would add, Madam Chair, and this is probably for the newer members, is that last Thursday, we had the discussion about the tax, kind of an introduction to the tax expenditure report by DOR, and then this implicit six-year sunset issue. And that was, the intent was kind of turning the committee's attention toward tax credits, mostly tax credits, but some others, property tax items, in terms of setting up the process for JTAX. It's really shifting gears towards, you're going to have a lot of bills now in front of you that are these tax credits. Occasionally, you'll have a non-tax credit item that is a tax expenditure. It's an extension of the sunset. So some of the things that we touched on last Thursday will be coming up this week and in the coming weeks.
Thank you. Any last words from committee members? If not, I will see you at our next meeting. We're adjourned.